Welcome, everybody. Let me help you envision, explore, and execute your plans. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. She's an engineering manager for a circuit board company, but she's here to teach you something about fear. Karen Stille. Before we get started today, I just want to make sure you know you can go to motivatemepodcast.com, and there you're going to find our show notes, links to all of the resources mentioned. You'll find an application to be on the show. You'll have access to our email, and we can direct you to the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook page, because nothing matters more to me than to connect with my listeners. So I hope I can do that starting right now. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today's guest is Karen Stille. She's an engineering manager for a circuit board company and a coach for a nutritional cleansing program. She is also a breast cancer survivor. Karen, first, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much, Lynette. I'm happy to be here.
Now, you know, we do kick off the episode with a quote. Do you have one that's meaningful to you?
I do. It's so meaningful. I have it tattooed on my arm.
I guess you don't have to look far to read it then.
No, I don't. It's actually kind of two quotes. In weakness lies strength, and in fear lies courage. What I found is in your weakest moments is usually where you find your most strength, as with courage. When you're most afraid of something is where you muster up the courage to actually do it or go through it. So I've had that tattooed on my arm to remind myself of that.
Now, is that a quote that you came up with?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a personal quote, something you created.
Yes.
I like it, and I have a feeling it's based on your experience.
Yes, it is.
So tell everybody what your passion is and why you're here with us today.
Well, to start off, I was diagnosed in 2012 with stage 2B triple negative breast cancer. Through lots of doctor's visits and lumpectomy, they decided to kind of hit me hard with treatment. It took me 5 months of chemo. So I was diagnosed with the BRCA2 gene after my chemo treatment. After that, I decided to have a double mastectomy, which then followed with 30 treatments of radiation. So in all, I guess my treatments went about 7 months, 7 to 8 months.
Wow.
of treatment. So that involves a lot of doctor's visits, a lot of family and friends helping me, lots of puppy sitting for friends. I had a lot of people around me. And what I found is after it was all said and done, or after it was quote unquote over, everybody kind of goes back to their lives. They think you're done. You know, in, you know, physically you don't feel done. Mentally you don't feel done. And it leaves you kind of empty and alone. So I started to experience depression, which completely took me by surprise. I didn't expect it. I felt ashamed of it. I felt like I was being very ungrateful for my life and for, you know, having gone through what I went through and having survived. And I didn't know how to process that. I ended up crying constantly. And I finally brought it up to my oncologist. And I said, what's wrong with me? Why, you know, am I crazy? What's happening to me? And she said, no, this is very common. Like, very, you know, nonchalant. This is very common. And, you know, we can put you on some medication. I mean, I was on medication already for anxiety and depression through the treatment. So we kind of increased the dosage on that. And she introduced me to the counselor at the institute. So when I spoke with her, she again said how common this was. And I thought if it's so common, why do I not know about it?
And when you're saying it's so common, you're talking about people who are experiencing depression after successful cancer treatment, right?
Correct.
And I guess it could be true not just for cancer treatment, but for any longer term medical crisis, probably.
Yes. From what I understand, this happens after open heart surgery, anything where I think there's a rally around you and you have to be strong through it. So for 8 months that I was strong, you know, it's almost like an exhale at the end. And when you exhale, you're left alone, basically. You feel abandoned. Yeah. So you do have that sense of abandonment.
And I think, too, for you and what you're talking about with open heart surgery and cancer is also that element of fear that the person might not survive this.
Yes. Well, that actually came during my treatment. I don't even know if I started my treatment yet. There was one moment where I thought, wow, I could possibly die from this. After that, you muster up the strength.
And I think, though, that the people that are rallying around you, you know, with that element of the fear of death, they're, you know, building you up to build that strength to keep you in the game because they're scared too, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes. And they don't like to show it. So at least the people around me, I can't speak for everybody. I can only speak for my situation. But from what I understand, it's a fairly common situation. And so they try and lift you up and, you know, rally the team, right? You have a long road ahead. Cancer treatment is unlike any other disease treatment, I guess, in that it's long. It's a long process, typically. So you're kind of in this world for a period of time. You're seeing doctors constantly. You know, you're in treatment. You're constantly being observed at some level. So when it's over, it's kind of like letting the bird fly and you don't feel like you have your wings yet. So it's scary. It's very scary. What comes after that as well is not just the sense of abandonment, but recurrence fear is a very strong feeling. Just you're so afraid that this is going to happen again.
And do you live alone, Karen?
I do.
How do you think that played into that for you? Just for people who are out there right now, because some people are probably living alone and having the same feelings that you're having. And I'm curious, I wonder about people who are not living alone, but I wonder if they feel unseen in this scenario as if they are alone, but they're not, because that's not a great feeling either.
No. So being alone was tough. I did have, you know, people were a phone call away, so I did have that kind of safety net. But from what I understand is, and this is from going to my groups, my cancer groups, is even if you have people around you, you can still feel that sense of alone, you know, of feeling alone, because nobody really understands what you're going through unless you've gone through it. I've said this in group before where, you know, cancer is unlike any other disease in that it affects every part of your life. It affects you socially, affects you physically, it affects you spiritually, financially. I mean, it just entwines itself into every aspect of your life. And you don't expect it. It's a terrible disease, but people survive it.
Now, I know that you have recently, I mean, it hasn't been that long that you have decided that this is your passion to inform people about the fact that people can experience depression after successful treatment.
When I said to the oncologist, why, you know, if this is so common, how come you don't tell us about it? Or, you know, you didn't mention it to me that, you know, this could happen. And, you know, she didn't really have an answer. I don't know that if it's they don't want to trigger it, they don't want you to expect it. But it kind of took me by surprise. So when I started coming out of it, I started thinking about it a little bit more. And I tried to find any kind of information on it. The only thing I can find was depression and cancer. So depression while you are, you know, in active treatment, fear of death, and that kind of thing. But there really wasn't a lot of information on depression after successful treatment. And I found that pretty odd, since it's such a common, you know, quote unquote, common thing.
Which I know you're starting to work towards writing a book about this now, correct?
Yes. So I would love to get this out there and speak on it and eventually put a book together about it. There are a few books. I found one that was written in 1997 called Dancing in Limbo. And it's Making Sense of Life After Cancer. So I'm in the middle of reading that book. I found a couple of other ones, but nothing, not a whole lot on it.
And nothing current, it doesn't sound like. And something else that I think would be amazing for you to do, and I don't know if they do it in the books that you have there, is just to get the testimonies of other people of how this surfaced for them and what course of action they took. And sometimes, you know, when you're going through things like this, it takes you a long time, like you said, to kind of fess up to your feelings, to get help for it, to admit it. You feel guilt and shame. And I could see why you would even feel it more so here than with depression, because so many people have done so much for you. And then you, like you said, feel ungrateful.
Right.
So, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people, especially with the internet, maybe people could reach out to you as well. And we'll give your contact information for anybody who's experienced this, that you could include it in your story.
Yes, absolutely.
So what kind of hesitations are you having right now moving forward with this project? Because remember, one of the things we're talking about here is you have this passion and you're acting on it, which I think is amazing. And I know my listeners, they have passions of their own and they're trying to get motivated to take steps into doing this. So what hesitations are you having and how do you see yourself overcoming them?
My hesitations would be, you know, I'm not a PhD doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not an oncologist. So, you know, scientifically, I guess that would be my hesitation, is how credible am I? But then again, I'm credible because I've gone through it myself. And I've gone to groups where other women, other people felt or are feeling the same way.
That's why I think testimonials will be very powerful for you. And also, don't forget that you can include in your book research and data and cite it and everything else. And that is credible.
That's absolutely true. Yes.
What do you think that you've learned about yourself through this whole process?
Oh, wow. That might take a while. I've learned so much, not just about myself, but people in general. I've learned that even if somebody has the same exact disease or situation as you, your journeys are completely different. You have completely different experiences with it. And I've learned that I can overcome anything.
What do you think you've learned about yourself as far as being a person that's going to step out and put themselves kind of in a spotlight scenario?
Well, I've learned that, you know, I can't be afraid anymore. That's for sure. And fear lies courage, right? So I want to push aside the fears and just do it and get it out there. I think it's important enough for it to be out there and to help people.
And, you know, Karina, I really think that you're not going to just help yourself and the readers of your book, but I think you're also going to help the other people who contribute their stories to your book.
Yes.
Especially because it's going to make people feel important enough to be included, if that makes sense.
Yes, that absolutely makes sense. And you're absolutely correct.
Now I'm going to include the book that you mentioned before, the one that was written in 1997.
Dancing in Limbo, Making Sense of Life After Cancer.
Okay, so I'm going to include that in the resources. Is there another book that you would recommend?
Well, there is another book that I read that really helped me step out of my comfort zone a little bit, and it's called You Are a Badass.
Love it.
Do you know the book?
No, I just love that You Are a Badass is totally up my alley.
Yes. So it's definitely a personal development book, but it's written in a very coy way and fun way. So I definitely recommend that to all the women out there.
Okay, I'll make sure to put that in my show notes too. Now, here's the thing. This part of the show is the Motivate Me Express to Success, because I believe in order for people to act, they have to first envision something for themselves. They have to explore their options or how to do it. And then they need to execute a plan. So if somebody was to envision themselves really becoming the face of a cause, in a sense, because that's what you're doing here. What right now are you envisioning? Because I know you are early in the process. So what are you envisioning right now?
Right now, I'm envisioning myself just learning as much as I can, interviewing people, going to as many breast cancer groups and cancer groups as I can to find people that are willing to contribute to this and understand it.
So you're envisioning yourself getting out and mixing with the people who are connected to your story.
Absolutely, yes.
And then to explore, what will your next step be, or what have you started doing? I know exploring other books that have been written is
yes.
One thing you're doing.
Yes, so I've been exploring other books. I plan on speaking to oncologists about it and getting their point of view and why they're not upfront. For the most part, I can't speak for everybody. But at least my oncologists and the oncologists of the women in the group that I go to, they're not forthcoming with the information. So I'd like to get their point of view on that.
And that's just as valuable as research.
Yes.
You know, so you're writing a book about people's experiences, including the doctors.
Yes.
And the thing is that, you know, if their answer is, we don't want to trigger that for people, then that's their answer.
Correct. Right. Right.
So to execute a plan then, how are you going to take this to the next level? And yes, we're going to hold you to it.
Well, I hope you do.
Okay.
I have a lot of learning to do. I have a lot of learning on, you know, speaking, public speaking, and writing and organizing my thoughts. So I do have technical things that I need to learn in order to execute.
Well, maybe executing your plan, though, is to get an editor that can help you pull it together.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because that's the other thing, and that's a great point to bring up here for everybody, because we all have our weaknesses. First of all, to write a book, you don't have to be a speaker. So don't even think about the speaking just yet.
Right.
Although coming on this show is a great way to start.
Yes.
But, you know, focus, I would say, because I am a writer, so I would say focus on what your intentions and your end goal is, what you hope to accomplish with your book. Continue to do research with people and doctors and the books, but, you know, continue the journaling that you're doing. You can write this book in a style that is more casual. It does not have to be something super formal, and you can get an editor to comb through it when you're done.
Okay.
You can even consult an editor beforehand who can discuss with you different structure possibilities. I would be happy to talk to you about that.
Oh, I would love that, Lynette.
Anytime, because, you know, I am such a fan of the fact that you are on the verge of putting yourself out there in a way that is so meaningful, that can make your experience mean something.
Yes.
To a lot of people, not just for you, but, you know, this could be part of your purpose. This could be absolutely part of your life process, and it's meaningful.
Yes, absolutely.
So what kind of closing advice do you have for everybody?
Well, if you're closing advice on in the sense of if you're experiencing depression after your treatment is, don't be ashamed and don't feel guilty, and find somebody to talk to about it. find a group. If you're not a group person, then find the counselor that runs the group and have a one-on-one. Or reach out to somebody that's gone through it. It's hard to talk to people, in my experience, who haven't gone through it, especially if you're in the midst of it, of the depression. You can get angry quickly with people. You get short because you know they don't understand, and it's not worth that battle within yourself. So find somebody who can understand that part of it.
Helpful advice. So you, I know, are a part of Motivate Me Ultimate Support System already, but do you have any other contact information you would like to share?
I have an email address, which is Karen@KMS-NCC.com.
Okay, awesome. And you know, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, because I know, Karen, this is not something that you're used to talking about, and certainly not in a venue such as this one.
Right.
So I want to thank you, because I know that there are plenty of people out there, and whether it's cancer or it's something else, but they have something to say and they just don't know how to go about doing that. They can reach out to you. They can reach out to me. They could come into the group and we can brainstorm with them. I love doing that. I think it's so healthy for people to get involved in society and try to help people in ways such as that.
Yes. And,
you know, something that I was not planning on mentioning during the show, but since it is you and the way we met, I think it's probably a good time to talk about it for the first time on the show, which is that, you know, I have my 50-state tour coming up and we have a Motivate Me product line coming out, and 20% of the profits from that product line is actually going to be donated to the organization that you're a part of, which is Steps Together out of Hillsborough, New Jersey. And it was one of their events where you and I actually met for the first time.
Yes. Yes.
And organizations such as that are so beneficial. I mean, I'm sure they played a part for you.
Absolutely. I do attribute a lot of my getting out of my depression to getting more involved. I was always involved with them right at the tail end of my treatment, but I decided I need to be more involved, and that absolutely helped me come out of my depression. You cannot be depressed and angry helping other people.
That is so true. I talk about that. Of course, you always have to go home to your life and be you, but it's a nice reprieve when you're out and you're doing for others.
Yes. And when you're doing for others and you do come home, you feel good about yourself.
Right.
It's just the natural progression.
And, you know, for me, the reason why we're connecting with Steps Together is because a lot of people within that group are struggling with medical crisis. And for me, wanting people to incorporate a passion into your life, I know that for everybody, it's not as easy. So, you know, whether it's because of a medical crisis or because of money that come with medical bills or whatever it is that people are experiencing. And so that's why I really wanted to connect to your organization that you're a part of, because I just, you know, I want to help those people. They're awesome people and the organization's doing great things.
Yes, they are. And I appreciate it so much, Lynette.
Well, that's it. That is the end of our show. And everybody, your go do today. What do you think they should go do today, Karen?
Go find your passion and do it. And don't be afraid.
Start with a journal entry. You know, yes. If you think this is your passion, sit down and just put it into your own words.
I can give them an exercise, which I did, which was quite interesting. Write down 50 to 100 goals, and you take out any money, any fears, any things that you don't think you can do. You take all of that out, and you just write whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. And just keep listing some things that you would like to do, almost like a bucket list, but get crazy.
Get crazy. And then I say envision, explore, execute, because that's what got me going on a 50-state tour.
There you go.
All right, Karen, thank you so much. And everybody, that's the end of the show. Please remember, you motivate me. I'm Lynette Renda.